Well, good morning, everyone. Let's go over to Matthew chapter 5. We're going to continue our looking at the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus has preached. Last week we looked at a number of things that we can learn from the Beatitudes and happiness that we enjoy by being poor in spirit, that we are humble and that we will mourn over sin, that we will see the strength in meekness, that we will also hunger and thirst after righteousness, that we will show mercy because God has been so merciful to us, that we'll have a pure heart, we'll work at our heart and make sure that it is pure, that we'll share the gospel of peace, that we will be peacemakers, that we will in fact suffer for Christ and know that we can rejoice and be happy that we have suffered as a Christian. We've suffered for righteousness' sake. So I hope that that was helpful for you. Last week we're going to continue our thoughts now looking at verses 13, 14, 15, and 16. You know, there are a lot of ideas that men have to change the world. I mean, they think that you bring the status of the poor up. Well, that hasn't worked yet, has it? All the millions and billions and trillions of dollars that are thrown to try to do that, and yet that is not what has made the world and changed the world. To bring democracy to all nations, that everybody can be free, that hasn't worked either, has it? That it has, in fact, changed the world. That there is some, and there's a big promotion for tolerance, for inclusion, that somehow this is going to change the world, or that there would be an equity, that all would be fair, and that even the popular song, all we need is love, love, love is all that we need. So some believe we just love, we're going to change the world, and you'll see and hear that often. Some think, I think, that you can change the world through military force, and I believe that that's the wrong idea that many had about the kingdom of the Messiah, that somehow through military force that the world would be changed for the better because the Messiah had come. But there's only power that the only power that has enough power to actually change the world is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that's what Paul was talking about in Romans chapter 1 and verse 16. This is not a new passage by any stretch of our imagination here, but verse 16 he says, "For I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first and also for the Greek." It is the power that changes the world. And we can certainly see that, can't we? That if an individual can be affected by the gospel of Jesus Christ and then have the attitudes that we see to have happiness in the Beatitudes, that the world would change. And so we often think that we need to change and help one individual come to Christ. And that's important. I think that we need to make sure that we consider the one individual and what good that will do. I also thought of Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 12, which talks about the power that the word has and how it is it says the word of God is living and powerful, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the division of soul and spirit, joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and the intents of the heart. And there is no creature hidden from his sight, but all things are naked and open to the eyes of him to whom we must give an account. And so it is the gospel, the preaching of the world. That's what of the word. That is what changes the world. But the gospel can't be forced upon people. There are a lot of people that I would like to, that I care very much about, that I'd like to, in a sense, force the gospel upon them, but I can't do that. I can't do that. And that's clearly seen in the majority and how they reject Jesus. And even in your thoughts, the good thoughts around the table, thank you, that you shared, is the baffling that people can't see that the New Testament, the new laws, even much easier, if you would, than the Old Testament and all the sacrifices, and yet people don't even consider. And so the majorities reject Jesus when he lived on the earth, and the rejection of his disciples are clearly seen in the book of Acts, and that continues today. Because the gospel has to be accepted and obeyed, and people aren't willing to do that. But the power of the gospel does not end at one's conversion, does it? I think sometimes we think, well, you know, we got them under the water and they were baptized for the remission of their sins, and then that somehow that's it. But the Sermon on the Mount is going to challenge us because it's going to be dealing with who we are as disciples of Christ, and it's going to challenge our heart and what we put in it, and there's going to be all kinds of things that challenge us in this particular sermon. And so the power of the gospel doesn't stop at our conversion, because that's really when the work begins. That's when change must take place. That's when we read the Word of God that I say, well, I'm not doing that, or I'm violating that, or I need to be doing this. I step up and I change and I do what is necessary. And so you and I need to share that gospel because it has that kind of power, because it is very rewarding to help people be delivered from the power of darkness and see them have their lives transferred into the kingdom of Christ, and what a difference that makes in that person's life, the real change that takes place. A person that was of this behavior and now their behavior is changed because of the gospel of Jesus Christ. We're not talking about fake change. We're talking about real change. And when an individual is added to the church, what does that do? Well, that makes the light brighter, doesn't it? That makes the world much better because one more soul has been added to the kingdom of God. And so last week, as we considered Jesus' sermon, and as I mentioned, D. Bowman likes to call that the mountain message, it's clear from our study that, again, happiness is achieved by a different way than most people would think. And so in verse 13, as he then says, you are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. So now might be a good time to put your marker there, as we'll go away from it from time to time and come back. But as we're looking at this particular passage now, there's a distinction that is made. One of the first things that you see is there's a distinction made between you are the salt of the earth. There's you and there's the earth. And so when he's talking to individuals, that he's talking to people that we don't have Christianity yet. Jesus hasn't died. But he's giving us all the tools, and he is giving to us the revelation of his Father, the things that he is saying are things that can be done at that moment, even following the law of Moses, being the salt of the earth. But he's making a contrast, and he's talking to individuals that would have the desire to be, as it talks about in the Beatitudes, theirs is the kingdom of heaven, to be comforted, to see God. That these are the type of individuals that that Jesus has in mind. And so there's you, and I would say followers of Christ, and then there's the earth, those that do not follow Christ. You are the salt of the earth. And so there's a distinction made between those two groups. And so salt is it is a very unique product. It is an amazing product. It is used in all kinds of things in industry. One of the things that I think comes to mind is, especially up north, they've been replenishing their salt piles because they're going to fill trucks full, and they're going to spread that on the road to make sure that people can get about because it melts ice. And I've done it this before. I could tell you how it's used in so many things in industry. But we know it best as table salt and how it enhances flavor. When we think of that, we think about, well, table salt. And I'm sure that all of us, somewhere close by when we're cooking, there's the salt shaker. And that's what we think of. That's the first thing I think of when I think of salt. It has antiseptic properties. Do you not ever take some warm water and put it in a glass and put some salt in it and kind of stir it around and then swish that around in your mouth to help with a sore or something of that nature? It has that type of property. We spray saline solution up in our nose to help soothe our sinuses. It can be used as a preservative, and it was used a whole lot more than it is today because, you know, before refrigeration, they would cover and coat things with their meats that they would hang in the smokers to keep the the flies and things off. There were so many things that they did, and salt was a big part of that. In the Bible, it destroys land. If you were to look at Judges chapter 9 and verse 45, that if you wanted to make a land barren, you would sow it with salt, and it'll kill it killed the land, made it barren. And so it has that kind of property as well. As I said, it is a unique property, or a product, salt. And we can't live without it, can we? I know that in the Civil War, that was a big thing. If you could stop the salt line getting to the soldiers, because they had to have a salt ration out on the front. They had to be able to have salt intake. You have to have salt intake. And so that's why when you sweat, you get that white ring when it dries. That's generally the salt, just like you see out on the road when they have spread the salt on the road and then all the ice is melted. You're going to see this white looking ring around things where the water has shrunk up, but it leaves this ring. That is the salt. And so it is something that even the soldiers had to have. And so that was strategic. You tried to break the salt line. There's Saltville, Virginia, that was known for, that's where they got their salt. And so they were trying to disrupt that type of transportation of the salt. And there is history of salt. There's a lot to salt. The Greeks, it was called a hal, and it was the price of a slave. And so we have a saying, he's not worth his salt, she's not worth her salt, because it is that type of thought. It was the first Greek coins were measured in salt. They had a salt mark or a hallmark, H-A-L, hallmark. Truly salt, though abundant in nature, has always been an important commodity, even frequently used in place of money. Salt in place of money. Think about the value then of salt. The Romans, it was sal, S-A-L. Salder, give salt. There are all kinds of words that are playing off of this. Salad, salsa, salami. These are all words that come from sal and the idea of salt. The Roman soldiers were partly paid in salt. It was said to be from this that we get the word soldier or soldier, meaning, again, soldier. Soldier, meaning to give salt. And from that same source that I have, it is the word salary. My salary. Salarium. And so it is, again, a very unique product. And so thus we have the English phrases, person earns one's salt. You see, we don't think about that. He's earning his salary, but earns his salt, or he's worth his salt. One is worth keeping. One has worth to keep around. But in Mark chapter 9, salt that doesn't work, it's useless. It's useless in Mark chapter 9 and in verse 50. Salt is good, but if salt loses its flavor, how will you season it? Have salt in yourselves and have peace with one another. We can see why Jesus would say that salt that doesn't have influence upon that which it comes in contact with is useless. Let me say that again, because now we're getting into what does this have to do with me? You are the salt of the earth. But salt that doesn't have influence upon that which it comes in contact with is useless. A person can tell right away whether salt is working or not, can't they? Can't you tell whether salt is working or not? Yeah, because you'll say, that's too salty. What did you think of that? Well, that's too salty. Or pass the salt. What is that saying? Well, it needs some salt. And I've watched enough of the cooking shows with my wife to know that they often say, could use a little more salt. Could have used a little more salt. Now, I can't tell you how many times they say that. Well, family, co-workers, friends, you know what they see right through? They see right through hypocrisy. You say, you're a Christian, but they watch what you do. They hear what you say. They know what you're watching. And so you have to influence the good. You have to influence them for good. And when you don't, because of hypocrisy, what they see is all that good that you profess, it's lost because they see your hypocrisy. Your salt has lost its flavor. And that's what Jesus is talking about in Mark, but also back here in Matthew. But if salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? What's it good for? Nothing. So what good is a disciple or a follower of Christ? What good are they if they lose their saltiness, if they aren't able to influence? Well, they're good for nothing. And so in saying that you put it out on the road and you trample it underfoot, and you would put it out on the road, you wouldn't throw it on the side of the road. If you've ever had to deal with salt in water or whatever, you don't just go dump it in your flower bed, do you? You want to think about where you're dumping that, because it will, as I said, it'll kill the landscape around it. So you have to think about that. And so if a Christian has lost their influence, then it's good for nothing. So they would take the salt and they would put it right in the road, because then men are trampling under it, and it's a path where you don't want the weeds and you don't want things to grow up. And that's what he's saying. It's good for nothing. Put it out, and where you put it where men trample it underfoot. And so basically, think about how this is the same thing. If a disciple of Christ isn't bearing fruit, what does he say? You cut off the branch and you throw it in the fire. And so it's the same idea. Salt that doesn't have its influence is worth nothing. It's good for nothing. And so is a Christian. And ultimately, Jesus is saying, if you don't have that influence and it's worthless, salt, you are the salt of the earth. But if it's the salt loses its flavor, then he says, you cast it out. And so it will be with the Christian. And you only have so much time on earth. And then it is our eternal destination that is fixed when we die or the Lord comes. And then in our text, it's very interesting that he says, nothing seasons salt. Think about that. The salt's not working. What do you do to make it work again? There's no product that you can add to it to bring back its saltiness. Do you understand what he's saying? What do you season salt with? Oh, my salt needs a little more seasoning. What do you grab out of the cabinet to put into it to make the salt more salty? He says, there's nothing. That's his point. There's nothing. If it has lost its flavor, it can't be seasoned. It's good for nothing. And so we have to think about this. We have to think about salt. You are the salt of the earth. And then finding ourselves useless in our influence, and there's nothing that will make it come back. So let's take what we know about salt and understand, well, what is Jesus teaching us by comparing those in his kingdom to salt? Well, he's talking about Christians. He's talking about followers, those that would be in the kingdom, in the church. And how naturally they are to be influencing the people around them for good. All of us bear this responsibility. Everybody here in this congregation bears this responsibility to influence others for good. Notice what Paul says, holding your place, over in Romans chapter 14 and verse 7. Romans chapter 14 and in verse 7. He says, for none of us lives to himself and no one dies to himself. there is none of us that are just lone wolves. It doesn't work that way. Now, you could go and hide yourself and become a hermit and just live your days out where you have no contact with anybody. But there's nothing in the scriptures that would teach that God's people, you need to go back to what Jesus was saying about how you're happy and what makes you happy. Because that person is miserable. That person's got something that is terribly wrong. So you'd have to go back, it's like see the first lesson. But when you come past that, nobody lives into themselves. You are going to come in contact with other people. So the things that you do, the way that you act, the things that you think about, the things that you laugh at, the things that you say, guess what? They influence other people around you. And just like when salt comes in contact with the meat and it enhances the flavor, so it is with God's people. You are the salt of the earth. And so your life, if you'll turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 11, and we don't need to look at Paul and think that Paul is some superhuman being, but Paul says this, imitate me just as I also imitate Christ. Can you say that? Follow my behavior because my behavior is that of Christ. And we want to throw our hands up and go, well, nobody can be like Christ. Well, something's wrong when our thoughts, our actions, the things that I mentioned, the things that we laugh at, the things that we do, if that's missing and it's not as Christ would have us, then again, how are we salt in the earth? So you do influence those people around you. All that is right, good, pure, humble, honest, merciful, gentle should be seen in the life of a Christian. Because being a Christian is a 24/7 profession. And it is demanding. And that's why Jesus said you need to count the cost. Because we don't get to take a time out and I'm going to go over here and do what I want to do for a while and then I'll just come back. It doesn't work that way. It's a 24/7 profession of life. And then he doesn't stop there. He says, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. In John chapter 9 and verse 4 and 5, Jesus is the light of the world. Jesus is the light of the world. John chapter 9, verse 4 and 5. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Where's Jesus? He's at the right hand of God. Who's left? We, his followers. You are the light of the world. In John chapter 8 and verse 12, Jesus also said, John 8 and verse 12. He said, those by the wayside are the ones who... let me get in the right place. I went to Luke. John 8, verse 12. Then Jesus spoke to them again, saying, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. And so you follow Jesus. And when you follow Jesus, you are light. And so you have to live your life in imitation of Christ, who is the light. And then you light up the way as he is no longer here. So people see your life. And so can you be a secret disciple? Well, some tried that in the Bible, didn't they? Well, we believe in Jesus, but we don't want to get kicked out of the synagogue. And so they were secret followers of Christ. I don't want anybody to know I'm a Christian because then they'll think that I'm square. I don't even know what the word is anymore. Seems like I asked that the other day. John chapter 12 and verse 46. I came as a light into the world that whoever believes in me should not abide in darkness. So following Jesus, you have light. You have light. And so coming back to our text in Matthew chapter 5, he says, a city that is set on a hill can't be hidden. You know, one of the things that will happen here in the next few weeks as it gets darker is on my way home on a Friday night, the whole top of the mountain is going to be lit up. because the stadium lights are going to be on. You can't hide that. It's up on the hill. And so that whole top of the mountain is going to glow because that light cannot be hidden. And so we understand what Jesus is talking about. And so not only that, but the disciples are to shine as light in the world. What does light do? Well, if you think what light does, it protects us. That's why we have lights in the parking lot. The one up here on the main road was out the other day. There was one over here that was out, and that's the power company, Muscle Shoals. They came out and replaced it, so that helped light this up. But when that one was out and that one was out, it was pretty dark again. It made you realize that, hey, something's not right, the parking lot. Why did we get those? Because before we had the parking light, we had the little one back here. You remember what happened during a gospel meeting? Somebody decided to come along and break into one of the visitors' cars, stole their wallet, broke their window. What do we have the lights for? To light things up. Because it protects us. What does the light do? What do the scriptures do, which is a light to our path? What is it? Jesus is the light. The light protects us. The light guides us to safety. Think of a lighthouse. And again, those are a dying breed. But they were there so people would know where the shoreline was. Ships would know where the shoreline was. And light reveals all that's around us. It exposes evil. You turn on a light and you can see what's going on. And Jesus reminds us that you don't hide your light. You set it up so it can be seen and it can do its work. You don't hide it, nor do they light a lamp, put it under a basket, but on a lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. You know, when the power goes out up on the mountain before you ever, you know, you don't just fire everything up. You kind of wait. Is this going to be temporary? What do? First thing you do is you get out your little lanterns or your whatever. And you know what we always do? We put them on the floor and put a basket over top of them so we're back in the dark. That's foolish. Well, that's not what you do. We find a high place. In fact, Sister Marilyn, she gave me a light bulb that you can screw into the socket and it'll put a charged battery in it. And so sometimes when it happens, it's got a little hanger. So all I got to do is click that and it comes on. It looks like a light bulb and I can just hang it right on the fan. Lights up the living room when things first happen. Just that small little light bulb will light up the whole living room and give us light. We don't stumble. That's what light does. You don't hide it. And so we as Christians, what do? We continue the work that Jesus was doing. And we reflect Jesus in our conduct. And so the last point is, do you do that to bring glory to yourself? Do you do that? Do you do all the let your light shine so everybody can go, oh, look, what a great person that is? No, he goes on, he says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. It is a wonderful thing when somebody says, I thought you were a Christian. Just by behavior, your conduct. They know you're different than the world. And the followers of Christ, they shine as a light to those in the world. And the world is dark. That's the opposite. The world is dark. And when the world is dark, what happens? Your example stands out. And it brings light into a dark world. And that brings glory to our Father in heaven. And God will be glorified by what we're doing. Because we're following His Son. We are doing what is right. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out, trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. If you're here this morning and you're not a child of God, you need to start by becoming a Christian. And you can't become a follower of Christ until you put Him on. And you put Him on by turning from sin, confessing your belief in Christ, and being baptized. That's when you put him on. You're baptized. Your sins are washed away, and you become a new living creature. And then you are a Christian, and the Lord adds you to his church. If you need to do that, we want to encourage you to do that. If you're a child of God, and you haven't been salt, your light has not been shining, if we can help anyone in any way, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.